Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now, we've got a good football show for you this evening. We'll be talking to Pat Nevin very shortly about the weekend, not least Manchester City 6, Chelsea 0. We have Paul Scholes dipping his toe down into management. This will be interesting. He certainly knew his apples and oranges as a pundit, Paul Scholes. Let's see what he...
How many of England's
goals on to do it?
England's so-called golden generation are in the managing game now.
Okay, go on. Lampard, Scholes.
I haven't thought about this.
Well, let's just do
Is it just Lampard, Scholes, and Gerrard? Because I'm thinking like
Gerrard. Yeah, that's three.
Actually, like the midfielders that couldn't play together.
Well, let's just go through it. Gary Neville, right back. No, Ferdinand. No,
Ashley Cole.
Ashley Cole, certainly not. No, still playing.
Sol Campbell still wasn't really in the golden generation, but he sort of was.
No, we'll put him in.
See, isn't it funny that
John Terry? No. David Beckham on the right,
but Terry's the assistant manager though. He's getting there. He's the assistant manager of Villa.
We'll have three and a half then.
He's gone on the circuit.
Gerrard and Lampard, yes. Paul Scholes often shunted out to the left-hand side. Yes.
No joy for him.
Mike Alone, no. And I don't suspect he will.
No, definitely a non-runner.
Is Emil Heskey Mike Alone's partner in the golden generation?
Well, he was. He played the 5-1 in Germany. He did.
There must be. Who else?
I'm trying to think. You're going a small bit older. Like the likes of the McManaman, Darren Anderton, that was the huddle. That was the 98 team.
That's not the golden generation. No.
Wayne Rooney, obviously, is still going.
He's a late addition to the golden generation. He came through in 04.
But you had Trevor Sinclair as well playing around that. You know, he played for them.
I just don't know if he put the golden in golden generation.
No, but he played.
Yes, I know.
He played
matches. The first team. So there we go, 3.5.
So they're getting there, really. But isn't it, it's just strange how the game goes that, Gerrard gets to manage a club like Rangers from the start, which is a massive job. Scholes, does it say something about the respective personalities? You know, the Gerrard, is that Liverpool, a good reputation there, but he takes on this big gig. Whereas Scholes seems to have meandered away from it. He did that interview recently about how he missed football on a Saturday and he's decided to go down to little old Oldham. Because there's a sort of a sentimental side of things to it for him. He lives close to the ground and stuff. Sort of interesting. You know, Campbell goes to Macclesfield. Is it because he can't get the gig? He has to go to the bottom of League Two.
His
personality
case,
is very much divisive. So, you know, it's strange, you know, and how management can be a great leveller sometimes. That you can be at the top of the tree. And yet, you'll have a guy like Nathan Jones, who's actually shrugged on at Stoke now. But he was a journeyman player and he's a rising star of management. You know, and all of a sudden, how long do you have? 10, 15, 20, 25 games?
Well, it's amazing really when Lee Carsley suddenly became unbelievably hot property as manager.
Yeah, of that Irish 02 generation.
Yeah. I mean,
is he the most... I hesitate to use the word sort of successful, but you know what I mean.
Most in demand.
In terms of his stock being highest in the game.
Yeah.
Obviously, Robbie's starting, Duff is starting, Given is starting. Mm. You know, our own sort of top generation. But Carsley is the one that's probably the top of the list, you know?
He sure is. So, 48 minutes gone at Molineux. How are we looking?
There's not a huge amount happening in this game,
to be honest.
Wolves, Newcastle, it's nil all. Watched most of the first half, actually, we spoke about earlier. And at that time, Wolves had a lot of the ball and weren't necessarily doing a huge amount with it. As I speak, they've actually missed a very good chance. But actually, Matt Doherty. But Newcastle, before half-time, actually had their moments and applied a bit of pressure without really... The Almiron, their new signings on the bench, maybe you might see him sprung in the second half, but it's been a bit flat. So the Wolves actually been very good this season against the better teams, but sometimes actually against the teams a bit lower down, they've actually maybe not been as incisive. And certainly tonight there's a bit of that about their performance.
Well, 49 minutes gone, and nil all. Matt Doherty... diving in at the far post, almost gets a boot in the face. Ooh, in fact, does.
Penalty shout.
He was stooping though, wasn't he?
He was. But I mean, I've seen him given and all of that.
Okay. Nil all. 48 minutes on the clock. Now let's reflect on the weekend.
Might fall to Sterling! Raheem Sterling, after 3.5 minutes, gives Manchester City the lead with their first attack. Aguero! What a goal from Sterling! Aguero, 30 yards out, right footed into the top corner of the net, past the despairing Kepa. That is wonderful. Headed clear by David Luiz. Aguero makes it 3. Chelsea switch off at the back, and as the ball came in, neither Rudiger or Luiz was ready for it, and it fell for Sergio Aguero, of all
people who twisted his body and somehow turned it past Kepa. And it comes back down to Gundogan. It is 4-0. Fires low from 20 yards out. Unstoppable from Gundogan. And unstoppable Manchester City. Sergio Aguero, right footed, rolls it in low to the right hand side. And a record equaling hat-trick for Sergio Aguero, his 11th in the Premier League. He still slides a wonderful ball through to Zinchenko, first time across, and it's turned in by Raheem Sterling. It's 6 for Manchester City. Wonderful, scintillating, first time football yet again. What a pass from David Silva, and a pullback from Zinchenko, who gets the applause of his teammates, and Raheem Sterling gets his 2nd, and Manchester City 6.
Here we are, 6-0 Man City against Chelsea. Pat Nevin is with us. I'm not sure we needed to inflict the full 6 on you, Pat, but you get the message.
Do you know what was brilliant about that? A couple of things, right? That's the longest you've ever played at that track ceremony.
Yeah.
It's a Manchester band, obviously. And the line that came out of it when you stopped playing the goals was, "Time to cry this time."
I'd like to say we planned all of that, but you're operating at a different level to us. Can I play you a quote from you last week? This is pretty prescient, I have to say. This is Pat Nevin speaking last week, where we got him to just give a quick glance ahead to Man City against Chelsea.
I think they're the dream team for City to play against,
right?
Chelsea, in many ways, because you know you're going to play Manchester City at their own game. Man City are better at it, so you know it's not absolutely beyond the bounds of possibility. But I mean, I would be surprised. What I would almost suspect is a high-scoring game. We're probably both sides scoring, because that's just the way Sarri is. He will open it out against Manchester City, and you know it will be an interesting game that way. But it will be mayhem, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm sort of open enough to enjoy the skills of any player that's out there, and there should be a lot of good players playing out there as well, who will be given a bit of space because it'll be quite an open game. So, no, I mean, but having said that, Mark Lawrence, and I think the call City won't get beat till now in the end of the season, I don't know how big a call that is. A bigger call would be they'll win every game between now and the end of the season.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I will not be even slightly surprised if that does happen.
So very prescient in many ways, Pat. The only thing you suspected Chelsea might score a few goals as well. That didn't quite happen. But the point about Chelsea being a good team for Man City proved absolutely correct.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I do this fantasy football thing and I had to guess a score for the game. And I guessed 4-1. So I just thought it would be, I thought it could be more than that. And then after a few minutes, I was at the game. Sitting amongst the Chelsea fans, I took my son and my wife wanted to come along as well, so they came along. And I've never done this before a game before, but I sat them down and said, "This might be really ugly today. This could be really, really bad today. I've just got a feeling about it." Because as I said to you last week, they are the perfect team to play against Manchester City. Manchester City dream of a team playing open football against them at home. With no sitting defensive midfielders, plural, never mind singular. And it was all set up for City to have that sort of day. So, dream scenario for them. And I have to say, I wasn't even slightly... Well, you can tell, I'm not surprised. I wasn't surprised at that at all. And the odd thing is, I don't know if Sarri will change it next time he plays. They've got to play again in the Carabao Cup in a couple of weeks' time. I wouldn't be surprised if Sarri does the same thing. So... sitting amongst those Chelsea fans, and I spent a bit of time watching them and listening to them, and it was quite extraordinary. It took a long time. You're talking fifth goal before a good number of them started turning. It's as if they understood that City team are unbelievable and Chelsea are wide open against them.
So am I right in saying that you think, you still think that yesterday was just an example of Man City playing a team that were perfect for them, as opposed to this Chelsea dressing room post Sarri criticising them very publically, is now having second thoughts about their manager. The 4-0 defeat to Bournemouth, you said almost to discount the win at home to Huddersfield at Stamford Bridge because they were so poor. So you're looking at the run of form since Sarri came out and criticised them, and I'm not discounting the possibility that the dressing room have thought, we're done here.
If I was, you know, sorry, I would be slightly less concerned about them being in a huff with him because, you know, he'd said, you know, the spirit wasn't right. That would be a lesser concern. A bigger concern was, are they absolutely believing in the system? You know, because if you get a group of players go out and they play to a system and you get beat 6-0 and you keep on doing that, if it is the case, I can't tell you, I'd be lying, I'd just be pretending and making it up, but if they were playing in that game and thinking, we don't believe in this, in this specific game, or, you know, specifically away games against the top teams, that should be a worry. But as I say, I can't tell you if that's the case. You know, players should be able to put up with, you know, managers saying, you know, it's a cliche, you don't, you know, dig them out in public, you know, but there you go, be grown up, go over it. You know, nobody's perfect all the time. Sometimes, you know, home truths have to be said, preferably indoors, but, you know, if they have to be said so that you get a reaction, fair enough. Bigger concern would be, you know, do they look at this and think, wait a minute, we played against Arsenal, we get battered there. Played against Spurs, we get battered there. Played up at Man City, we get battered there. You know, just thinking, well, wait a minute, do we know adapt? And Sarri has been interesting today and yesterday, saying it's not the system, it's the way that the players didn't play to the way that he wanted them to play. So it's up in the air with them, looking forward a little bit. The only people who know that are the people in the dressing room. You know, you keep your ear to the ground to see what you hear. There's nothing that I can hear coming out yet about that. But at the moment, that should be a bigger concern more than having a wee dig in public.
Yeah, like Pat, I was actually going to ask you about those Sarri comments because I don't know, do you have any sense the players not playing to the system? Is there a particular area of the team he's looking at? Is he looking at the midfield? You're trying to analyse his substitutions. You're trying to say, like, is there a particular area where they're struggling, or is this just a collective well, problem?
Well, to be fair, looking at the substitutions, I mean, I was watching them coming on and they had little or no interest to me because there wasn't anything in that bench and that system that was going to change it. There was no interest at all. Loftus-Cheek was brought on. He was massively at fault. For the fifth or the sixth goal, you kind of lost count after a while. He didn't follow the marker. So, you know, other players were coming on and weren't making any big, massive change to it. It's a very, very specific thing. A couple of things. A, City are brilliant, yes, and they were a fabulous form, and every one of the players were great. By the way, Zinchenko, one player missed out. He was amazing. Didn't get chased back once at any point in the game, so he had the freedom all the way down that side. But that's just one player, the left back. Everybody else was absolutely brilliant as well. But you look through it and you think, here's an analogy, right? You remember Barcelona, they're very, very best. And all their goals, or the vast majority, came the same way, straight through the D. You know, 1-2s, fantastic understanding and play, movement, etc., and ability to play those Ivan Needle balls, you know, with Xavi, with Iniesta, with Messi, right? So what everybody did, starting with Mourinho, is you stick a bunch of people in that D. So you got four, then you get three in front of them, all sitting there saying, right, go wide. Well, Manchester City have got the likes of De Bruyne, the likes of Aguero, you know, that love playing in that D sort of area. And Chelsea left it empty. You know, so you're sitting there going, if you're a player, you're thinking, well, why is that happening? Well, I can tell you what Sarri's answer is. Sarri's answer is, we keep the ball, it doesn't matter. We've got the ball. And they can have, there's no point, they won't get to the D because we've got the ball all the time. Problem is, this is Manchester City, and player for player, they're better than Chelsea players.
Like, that's a nonsensical defence, That's what he's been saying. I would lose faith in him as well, frankly. I'd be looking around the dressing room saying, that's not a good enough plan, that we just have the ball forever. That's not going to happen. We're going to be exposed. And by the way, if I was Kante's agent, I'd be saying, N'Golo, if this guy's sticking around for a couple of years, you need to move on.
Yeah. Actually, Kante's been playing really well. You know, that position, he's been playing really well. It's just that you notice where he isn't.
Yeah, I mean, which goal was it? For the first goal, the way Aguero sidestepped Jorginho. You just can't allow this to continue.
Yes, that's the point. Exactly the point. And his argument is, but if you do the thing right, and I'm just telling you what he says.
No, I know.
And if they do it. Now, in actual fact, it was very noticeable. Exactly the same thing happened start of the season at Wembley. Man City, and it was Foden that done them in that precise area. But oddly, to many people, some surprise, and even mine too, we have to be fair, Man City tried to do the same thing to Chelsea down at Stamford Bridge on December the 8th. And it worked for about 30 minutes, 35 minutes, but Chelsea hung on. And then Chelsea started doing it the way Sarri wanted it. Chelsea won 2-0. And Chelsea bossed it, dominated it. Two things to remember then, before we start thinking you're trying to paint an unfair picture. It is an unfair picture, because Man City were playing nowhere near as well as they're playing now. Mm. And also Man City had a big bunch of important players not playing on the day. So I don't think Chelsea could have done that to Man City had they been A, at their best, and B, had everyone available. So that's, I mean, it's a massive concern for Chelsea just now. Not just that. I mean, you can get beat by Man City and you can get thumped by Man City. I'm pretty confident they could do that to just about anyone without that sort of open game plan against them, but it's just that bit easier. But if you look back at the little run of play since that December 8 game that I was telling you about, Chelsea have just had too many really, really dodgy results, you know, losing against teams that they shouldn't be losing against. And they have dropped from that, you know, fourth chasing for third down, as we now know, to sixth position. So they're now chasing it, and it's looking a bit iffy. It's a shame, though, because, you know, they finally get in a centre-forward who looks lively. But I don't suspect, playing that way, that he's going to get a lot of his goals away from home against top six teams.
And is it not a tad unsophisticated that so much of the play in a perfect world has to go through Jorginho? That's your guy, because it doesn't seem like the hardest plan to counteract.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. If you're Jorginho, I always try and put myself in other people's shoes, right? So the reason why I thought Man City was going to win, because I put myself in their shoes and thought, what do you want to play against? Oh, yeah, it's that. Okay? Mm. So try and put yourself in Jorginho's shoes now, right? This is a really interesting one. Now, I can remember playing periods in my career where, you know, it's not egotistical. I was the most dangerous player on the team. I was the most creative player on the team, right? And I'd find myself being marked by two men, and the odd time, three. Really closed down and having no impact in the game. And me thinking to myself, well, this is actually good because there must be space elsewhere. Mm. Somebody else has got to have a lot of space. You better be using it. And being very disappointed if other people weren't doing that. If you're Jorginho and you've got two and three men on you all the time, you've got to think to yourself, what's everybody else doing? Mm. There's got to be a space somewhere. You've got to be using that space somewhere. You've got to be using that ability where there'll be one-on-ones in other areas. You better do it. So from his position, and Sarri must think the same. If they're crushing one guy and closing down one guy, you better be able to be good enough to move it in other places and those people to be able to make good use of it. Chelsea weren't able to do that.
Right.
For a number of reasons. And one of the reasons is Man City's brilliant energy, their brilliant movement, their willingness to work so hard for each other. It was absolutely fantastic.
Mm. It reignites the title running, doesn't it? Liverpool beat Bournemouth at the weekend, 3-0. Front three looking good again. And Trent Alexander-Arnold was back. I saw Danny Murphy doing a package in Fabinho, saying he's playing very well. And then you've Man City hitting their straps again as well. So this thing's ready to bubble away again, isn't it?
Yeah, and both of them have had a wobble, haven't they? Mm. You know, City had the wobble just before Christmas, you know, and Liverpool had their wobble. You know, no surprise, there was a load of injuries. There was a couple of suspensions. Big players were pushed to the limit. A couple of players have come back. I think Firmino's the big one. He really has kicked on. He was having a really quiet time. He's kicked back in again, and he's kind of core to that. And then you look at, you know, City, and it's the usual suspects. De Bruyne was... It was like having two or three extra men on the pitch with De Bruyne. He was fabulous in that game. And they didn't even play David Silva against Chelsea. So they're 100% back. There is, you know, a lot of games going... You know, over the Christmas New Year period, there is a stress of all those games, right? And then there's maybe been a little bit of a kind of window where they've had a chance to rest one or two. That's not going to last. Champions League starting again now.
Yeah.
You know, the Cup games are starting again now. You know, Man City have got, you know, that cup final coming up with the Carabao Cup, you know. So, you know, they'll be stressed and pushed again. I just get a feeling now that I think both of them are quite capable of lasting it a little bit better now. But I'm still with City. You know, I'm still with City. But you know, it's so, so close. And it's certainly the better team. I still think certainly the better team. In fact, many people are talking about it. And you worry about hyperbole. I would have hated to play against Manchester City the weekend. And that's not what you often say about teams, because you love to play against the best. But it would have been horrendous to play against them, because no, you just couldn't get near them. Mm. Nowhere. They were brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, Pat, like, how do you think Liverpool will handle the sort of the rotation element? Because you mentioned it there, like, City didn't play Silva. You know, they've managed to sort of rotate it a bit with Sané and Sterling. And, you know, Liverpool in forward areas, they mightn't have dead options. I know they do in midfield. But what do you think Klopp is going to do, you know, when it actually comes into this run? Because as you mentioned, City just seem to be pretty fresh in terms of how they've managed things.
And they won't agree with it. And certainly Jurgen Klopp will not accept it. But, you know, if you go for them all, you might lose them all. And you can't say, oh, we're not going to try for the Champions League this season. They're not going to say that. But the best thing in some ways that could happen to the likes of Spurs, to some degree Liverpool, is they maybe get knocked out of the Champions League. And then they won't get as stressed as much, because it will have an effect. Mm. It will tire. They will pick up a few injuries. And in the end, that could be the thing that's going to cost you. I'm just not so sure. You know, we all know now that, you know, Fernandinho is a big one. You know, they can't really seem to afford to, you know, lose him. Mm. But other than that, I mean, they bring Riyad Mahrez on at the end of the game, you know, against Chelsea there. They bring Silva on against Chelsea. There's no danger. I don't see any danger at all for Manchester City. I think they're going to be fine for personnel between now and the end of the season.
Yeah.
Just need to keep Fernandinho fit. Whereas, you're right, Liverpool, they're on the edge. But then they stayed on the edge and got close the Champions League, winning the Champions League last time, but it's going to be just that bit tougher for them. They've not got as good and as deep a squad.
Yeah, my favourite quote from the Man City Chelsea fallout was Azpilicueta, who said the first 5 or 6 minutes went well. So
I would disagree. Always, I would say the first that. 3 minutes went well. They were actually, do you know what, they started in a really unusual way, because the game plan was interesting. They closed down City phenomenally those first 2 or 3 minutes, and I thought, well, that's brave, because if you do that, you need to keep that pressure up at that pace for the entire game, and you can't let them break through the lines. I don't think there's a team around that are good enough to do that. And if you do it, everybody has to be on 100 mile an hour for the whole game. Chelsea haven't got players like that. You know, Higuain's not that type of player. Hazard's definitely not that type of player either. So try and doing it with 9, you're wasting your time. Can't work.
I did wonder if they'd poked the bear by setting such a frantic pace and really alerting Manchester City to the fact that this could be a big game, and, you know, you want to get moving here. Hey, what you want to do with City is let them have the ball, drop everyone behind, try and lull them into a sense of boredom. That's surely your best tactic, isn't it?
Well, that's the best things. I've been to the Etihad a few times this season, and the times when they've looked weakest, Manchester City, is when teams have done that. Mm. You know, they've went a 4-5-1 or a 5-4-1. And they've just camped in there, and they've frustrated them, and they've got the crowd quiet. And the crowd's not always the liveliest that they had these days, which is, I can't understand that, because Main Road was mental back in the day. But so you can actually quieten it, and they can look a little bit soporific. Am I allowed to use that? Yeah, I am. Mm-hmm. So they can be a little bit soporific the way they play sometimes, but you're right. If you open it up and say, right, we're going to have this big elongated five-a-side kind of game here, it's party time. It really is. Do you know, there's one other thing somewhere in the background of this. And the word naive, you know, everyone will throw naive at Sarri. But there's also a bit of you that kind of likes the fact at least he has a go, you know.
Yeah.
Other people kind of don't have a go, do they? They just sit there and you get beat 1-0, 2-0, and you think, yeah, that was a bit of a yawn.
Yeah.
Kind of, at least he has a go, but I don't think he'll necessarily want to have a go every time if they're going to get beat 6. It's just too much to take, and it will eventually have an effect on the players.
Yeah.
So Pat, how was the family trip in the end? I mean, what was the mood at 6 in the area around you? You know, you said the Chelsea fans were relaxed enough earlier on, but I'm guessing at 6 it might be getting a bit ugly around you, maybe.
Well, it was really, really odd, because it was a state of shock with a lot of Chelsea fans, without a shadow of a doubt as well. They tried to entertain themselves by taunting the Man City fans. I mean, hilarious. You're 4-0 down, 5-0 down, and they started singing towards the Man City fans, "We still can't hear you. Why are you not singing? 4-0 up and you're still not singing."
Mm.
I don't think that was biting into the City fans. Mm. To be fair, I don't think it was really affecting them. But it reminded me of something. Back in my own career, playing for Chelsea, and it was one year we were up challenging for top two or three, and we'd won, we'd beat Man City of all teams at Wembley in a full Members' Cup final, 5-4, another mad game. And the week after that, we went to QPR. And QPR were all right. They weren't that good. We should hammer them. They beat us, wait for it, 6-0. And, like, we could not believe it. And the Chelsea fans that day sang from start to finish. What an incredible difference it made, because, you know, we kind of eventually bounced back to it because they didn't turn completely on the team. And Chelsea fans are a bit like that. Mm. They kind of don't really turn on it. If you look at it, and sometimes it's a bit, it doesn't make sense sometimes. I remember watching, you know, even bad times in Mourinho, they didn't turn on, I remember, they didn't turn on them. They didn't turn on their managers when other teams would. So they're unusual fans that way. And although you kind of expected it to get really, really ugly, walking out afterwards, it wasn't as ugly as I thought. Mm. I thought it would have been angrier than it actually was. There's some angry people there. Of course there are, and they'll all phone into the phone-ins. But in actual fact, it wasn't the reaction I expected. But have a look at what's going on this month. I don't know if you've looked at, or anyone out there has had a good look at what Chelsea have got this month. What an incredible month. They've got two games against Malmo, so they could go out of the Europa League, although I think they'll stay in that one. That now looks like their best chance of getting Champions League football next season. Mm. They've got Manchester United in the FA Cup down at Stamford Bridge, and United are playing quite well.
Yeah.
They've got Man City they've got Tottenham at the end of the month, and then between that they've got the cup final against Man City. So anyone thinks that the 6-0 is all over for Chelsea, there's a lot to happen in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And it could look ugly, and you never know, it could turn it around, but it's going to have to be something special after that.
Yeah, best of luck, Jorginho. and with a view to PSG tomorrow then, I mean, you don't overstate things, but then again, that's kind of what the media is about most of the time. But, you know, tomorrow, genuinely, if it was to go spectacularly well or spectacularly badly, for Manchester United fans, tomorrow's one of those nights that can dictate and shape the next few years, you know. Solskjaer is continuing to do everything he can realistically do domestically, and you feel like European success would copper fasten the momentum behind him. So PSG, we've got that tomorrow. Is that Old Trafford? No Neymar.
Well, that's the no Neymars.
Yeah,
the no Neymars if really big, because having watched a few games in the French First Division this season, Neymar and Mbappe together have been out of this world, absolutely out of this world. They've been ridiculous in some games. Totally unstoppable. Now, there's lots of other good players there, and we know Cavani can score goals, etc. Yeah,
but and he's out tomorrow as well, actually.
Well, that gives you half a chance. It really does give. And, of course, everybody knows it. You asked this question 8 games ago at Manchester United, and you're almost laughing at it. It's not now. Man United have got a great chance. I would actually almost... In fact, I would. I'd put them favourites over
right.
the Tyne.
Right.
Because they're playing that well. And PSG, classically, after they've, you know, come back into this level of the Champions League, they're playing in the French League. Ligue 1 doesn't even test them. They've lost one game, off the top of my head, I think they've lost one game in Ligue 1 this season. But they're just not tested every week. It's a piece of cake for them. It's not going to be a piece of cake against Manchester United. But I still think it'll be still open in the second game. I'm going to that game over in Paris, and I still think the game will be wide open. But I wouldn't be surprised if they have to push Neymar back much quicker than they would rather have, because I think they'll need to get something out of that game. Oof, PSG, yeah. When it comes out.
Jeez, no, I mean, that would be fascinating if they do that. So we'll have to see. We're pretty much out of time. Nevin in Paris. It just seems so right to me. It's just perfect.
One of my favourite cities, it has to be said. Stay away from the Gilets Jaunes and it'll be fine.
All right, great stuff. Enjoy the football this week. Thanks, Mil.
See you then. Bye-bye.
Pat and Nevin, thank you. Always good to have Pat on. Indeed. Gary Lynch in Dublin says, after listening to Pat and parroting his views to my mates, they now think I'm a guru. More, please.
Yeah.
Every Monday, Gary. He is incredibly, incredibly prescient with his comments.
He's bang on it. But in the way end as well, with the Chelsea fans, you know, has an idea. Not just like in his press box, sort of ivory tower, you know.
Like you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. No, actually, in the last couple of years, I've actually really enjoyed, I've stopped going to games, I've started going to more games not working, and it's actually really enjoyable.
And do you hear people whispering, is that Dan McDonald?
No.
1-0 Newcastle, Dan, talk to us, 15 minutes to go.
Yeah, and Newcastle sort of probably actually deserves to be ahead, albeit like Wolves have probably had more of the ball. I'm not sure what the possession stats are saying, but they've actually played quite well. Rondon's been very good, and at the same time, it was a dreadfully poor goal to concede. It was Isaac Hayden with the goal. Newcastle sort of won possession in the Wolves' half, stepped forward. Hayden sort of wriggles free in the box. You're thinking right foot a shot, not much power. And Rui Patricio, just sort of one of these ones where it looks like he misjudged the flight of the ball and embarrassingly hits off and goes in the wrong way.
Mm. Camera picking out some topless Newcastle fans.
Yeah, that's like it's a staple of the cameraman at a Newcastle match, really, isn't it? Look at them there, having a nice day.
That batch in good shape, though. They're the Geordie Shore variety.
Game's gone, you see.
The new generation.
The game's good. It's the Instagram generation, Joe. You know?
There's no belly and a can of lager there. It's fake tan.
Yeah, the game is gone. But Wolves have sort of just been quite nice, you know, good to watch. Mm. But no real cutting edge to them tonight at all. Doherty had a few hairy moments in the first half defensively. He's actually contributed a bit attacking-wise in the second half. But Rondon, probably the standout player in the pitch.
Okay, 15 minutes to go. Now, on the 22nd of February, which is Friday week, we are continuing our build-up to the Cheltenham Gold Cup with the latest Bulmers Road to Gold event. So we're going to be in 22 nightclub in Dublin with comedian Jarlath Regan, jockey Brian Cooper, Kate Harrington, Johnny Ward will be there, as will Vogue Williams, Ollie Bell, and more names that we'll be announcing over the next few days. It's an exclusive and eclectic off-air event, so the only way to enjoy it is to be there on the night. Get on to offtheball.com/events to get your tickets, and remember, it's an over 18s night.
You're buzzing with enthusiasm there, Joe.
I just think it's like the last Bulmers Road to Gold event, one of the most intriguing and exciting lineups.
It's an eclectic mix.
Anything could happen.
You wouldn't have thrown those people together.
Johnny Ward, Vogue Williams, Jarlath Regan, Brian Cooper, Kate Harrington, Ollie Bell. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix of characters there, to be
it
fair.
Is. No, it should be a good night. So if you want to get your tickets, offtheball.com/events. And that should be a cracker. That's on the 22nd. February, which is Friday week. Short break here. Paul Scholes we're talking about, and Jack Byrne as well, who was the wonder kid of Irish football for a number of years, and he's been speaking to Dan McDonald.
Football on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. No change at Molyneux. Still Newcastle 1 Wolves 0 with 10 minutes to go. So Paul Scholes has been appointed as Oldham manager, Dan, on a 1.5-year deal. League 2 club. They are in 14th position. They just beat Crawley 3-0 away. They've been looking for a permanent manager since December when they sacked Frankie Bunn. Scholes now 44 years old. Oh my God. Do you know what? I can sort of live with them all being in their 40s. When I'm saying Paul Scholes 50...
That's a problem.
That will be a tough...
Still remember the little ginger kid scoring twice against Port Vale in a League Cup game. That was, I think that was one of the first times that generation revealed themselves.
Yeah, 44. Can sort of live with them in their 40s, but 50, that's when... That could prompt a midlife crisis for me.
Well, when he's 50, you're going to be pretty close to it yourself,
this
Joe.
Is the thing. This is
I mean, that's the real issue.
They were always the guts of about 10 years ahead.
There's going to be people listening. What are you talking about?
No, I know. It's you. Look, I think all of us...
They're more bothered about, I don't know,
each
Wayne Rooney being 50.
No, I don't. Look, each of us have our own generation of footballers. Mm. And we keep track of our own age through them.
Yeah.
And I was always 10 years behind this batch.
Yeah.
So he's 44 and 34 this year. There was always a nice 10-year gap. That was fine when they were 35.
Yeah.
When Paul Scholes is 50,
you're pretty much.
I'd rather not say.
You're done.
So
new John Malloy coming through.
The end is near. Yeah. So 44-year-old former Manchester United England midfielder has agreed to make his managerial bow at the League Two club. His appointment had been held up. He awaited clearance from the English Football League to take charge. This is because he owns 10% stake in Salford, who are chasing down National League promotion. But they expect all of that to be fine. It is unclear if Scholes will take charge of their match against Yeovil tomorrow, or whether his first formal game at the helm will be at the visit of Crewe Alexandra next Saturday, Dan. So Scholes clearly has done his little stint in television. He was decent.
He's bored of it.
He was decent. I'd say he did get bored of it and has decided to scratch the itch. So you're familiar enough with Oldham.
Yeah.
You were out there last season.
I was there last transfer deadline day last year at Oldham. And this is the thing, you have this image of football in England as being, you know, on a level.
Hold that thought. This seems like an emergency. Can you please shout out to Patrick? Patrick, you left your phone at home on the way to the airport. I have no way to contact you. That is from your wife, Emer.
Okay.
I'm going to say that again because Patrick is checking his passport. He's doing bits and bobs. He's at the airport. He may have thought, did I just hear that? Patrick, your wife, Emer, you left your phone at home. She has no other way to contact you.
So Patrick's obviously a regular listener. Well, every other station at the moment is calling out this line as
he
well.
He flicks it on in the car, I'm sure. Patrick, Porrig. You left your phone at home.
Turn back.
You're on the way to the airport. If you have time to turn back, Emer, your wife, has your phone. Emer, can't do any more than that for you.
Yeah,
He's
going to be panicked at the airport as well.
Yeah, okay. So, Emer, let us know how it goes.
Yeah. Patrick, obviously you can't.
But, no way to know if Potter got the message.
Yeah.
Right, that's all I can do for you.
Anyway, well, speaking of the degree of chaos,
yeah.
I was in Oldham at Transfer Deadline Day last year. And again, you have this image of English football. Like, you have this image of English football being on a level. I mean, Oldham, you remember Oldham, early 90s, even a small bit before your time. Joe Royal and that team.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Dennis Irwin playing for Oldham? So he played like a cup semi against Manchester United around 91. Or was it 90 or 91? But anyway. I went to Oldham last year thinking, you know, you go to the training ground. I was meeting Jack Byrne, who we'll speak about subsequently. But the Oldham training ground at the moment is just off a housing estate. You turn left, like, I mean, is this it? There's no, like, you go to Stoke or Burnley, even other clubs. You go Everton, you know, there's a security guard at the gate. You go up, you have to sort of give a couple of names, to get through. Oldham, you just sort of walk in off the street. You can go to number 12, 13, 14, 15, or you can just go round into the Oldham training ground. There's a couple of porta cabins there, and there's a training pitch there. And that's pretty much it.
Right.
That's all that's going on there at the moment. I assume there's plans, there's stuff going on. On that particular time, it was a bit cold, so the team actually don't train there that much. So they have to go up and train in Bendry Park, which is... So actually, long story short, I ended up getting a lift with the groundsman at the training ground. There was a bit of a mix-up over where the person I was looking to speak was, because I thought the team were training today, but they couldn't train on the training pitch because there was some issue with the training pitch. So they had to go and train in Bendry Park, where the pitch was dreadful, like a real bobbly, bad playing surface, yet the team still had to train there during the week because they couldn't train on their old training ground. And a lot of stuff came out last summer about the chaos at Oldham and League One level last year. There were a lot of players, a couple of French lads earning big money. This is the environment that Jack Byrne struggled in. Patrick McElhenney from the Dock came into it, yeah. Couldn't handle it. And they went down from League One to League Two. Despite paying reasonably good wages, the club itself just wasn't being run properly. You know, that's clear. There was definitely a club that was underperforming in terms of, you know, it seems to have a reasonable support base. Yet, as a working environment, it's not elite. It's not high performance. It's not like this amazing setup where Paul Scholes has come from Manchester United is going to walk in and suddenly, and maybe part of him will enjoy the challenge of like getting stuck in there and trying to lift things up, but it wasn't, it wouldn't sort of blow you away.
Paul Scholes might realise he's not as much, not as salt of the earth as he thought he was.
Well, I was just standing around there and like this bloke's just standing there next to me. Like, that's the first team manager was just standing there, Richie Wellens at the
time. It'll be a huge culture shock for him, there's no doubt. I would have thought that Oldham, given the heights they had reached for a period, would have at least have a more established
complex
training ground.
Yeah, yeah,
that is surprising. Chris has been in touch. Ah, here. Why doesn't Emer head to the airport herself and chase her man down before he passes through departures? It'll be like the final scene in a classic rom-com.
Particularly at 9:45. Like, there's very few flights going out at this time.
Come on, Emer.
there's a few flights, there's a couple to Russia, you know, over that neck of the woods, but generally, like, there'll be no one there.
Yeah.
No one on the roads.
Maybe she's not that bothered if Pora gets his phone or not. It's like, yeah, text off the ball, that's all I can do.
Just hope Pora's not getting too many texts when he's away. You know, like it's...
I'm intrigued now to see how this works itself out. Emer, do get back in touch at some stage, either way, even if it's tomorrow. I want to know.
But anyway, yeah. But that's, I mean, we'll see how Scholes fares.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, I was meeting Jack Byrne there last year, and at the time,
let's talk Jack Byrne.
Because Jack dropping down to Oldham was a disappointment, I guess, given where he'd been. Because, like, 3 years ago, Jack trained with the Ireland squad, almost around this time 3 years ago. Yeah. He was in Holland, playing for a relegation-threatened team on loan from Man City, but he was outstanding against Ajax, PSV, you know, comfortably, technically holding his own against some of the better players. And, you know, one of Europe's better leagues. It's not maybe what it used to be, but still a very good level for a teenager from Dublin to be sort of pinging the ball around.
If I'm not mistaken, even 3 years ago, and his technical proficiency was what we were all very excited by, he was even... talking, I don't know how realistic it ever was, but about the possibility, slim shot and everything, of being in the Euro 2016 squad.
Oh yeah, and there was a clamour. I mean, there was people calling for it on the strength of his performance. There was people sort of writing pieces, and you know, it was out there. You know, the suggestion that maybe he should, and he came and he trained with Ireland, did a press conference where he said himself that, you know, he sort of fancied his own chances in his own way. And I'm not sure, you know, we touched on it a small bit earlier, I'm not sure if Martin O'Neill and maybe Roy Keane loved that confidence. Uh-huh. But I mean, you know, he's not the tallest guy in the world, but he's got a big personality. You know, a big, you know, he's a really big character. And I think, you know, he does have this ability when you're on a pitch, you get drawn to him. I sort of touched on it today that I watched him play last Friday. Because, I mean, we're sort of fast forwarding through things here. That he came back from Canberra to Man City, went to Blackburn on loan, didn't really work out.
Yeah.
And you have to pick your loans carefully in football.
Yeah.
That one didn't work. And then took the punt to join Wigan permanently.
Yeah.
Again, change of manager and went to Oldham. A turbulent year there again with a club. As I said, I think the circumstance of the club didn't help him. Now, I assume he was in a reasonable deal, but that wasn't a great working environment and a lot of good players struggling, and he was one of them. He actually played well at times, but he would say himself he played a lot of football, but I don't think from looking from outside it was maybe the great place to be.
So did he get
and then Kilmarnock after this.
And did that work out for him?
No, that was a short term thing. So he's got a lot on his CV.
That's starting to look a bit ominous.
At 22 he's a lot on his CV.
Was he getting to a point where he didn't have offers and felt he had to come home, or was he just almost a bit disenfranchised with the whole thing?
I think there's a bit of A, a bit of B. Now, I spoke to him on Friday, a couple of us spoke to him on Friday, and I think he's outwardly still quite confident. And I mean, the line was, I don't think this is a failure coming back here. And of course he has to say that anyway, because no one is going to say that.
Yeah.
But I think there is a logic to what he's doing, because he went to Kilmarnock, who were top of the SPL, and he wasn't playing. And I think he wanted to go somewhere he could play at 22. And I think people have realised that if you come here and be the best player in the league here, that can actually skip you back up the ladder. In a way that, you know, Sean Maguire and people did when they were a bit beleaguered where they were. But I feel you've got an update coming on our airport friends.
Well, I think
you're like, I'm trying to talk about the football show here, Joe, and you're just like fascinated by this sort of Love Actually style airport dash.
I feel Richard Curtis.
You completely lost your composure.
Pulling the strings.
We're going to have a serious discussion, and you're just
I know.
Is there an update?
I will go and watch Jack Byrne Witcher for Rovers this year.
Yeah,
I really want
should,
to see him play.
Because I watched him play on Friday against the Brentford B team. Now, it's the Brentford second team, and he was just comfortably the best player on the pitch. And just you watch him play and his speed of thought, and he's confident. He's a bit cocky on the pitch, you know?
Yeah.
But he's got this presence. Like, how will he adjust to coming home? Because I just think it's going to be very interesting to see how he copes with that, because he's still got loads of time, but at the same time, he's probably coping with the expectation of everyone saying to him, Jack, why are you here?
Yeah.
And there's that balance in act, and outwardly he's very confident. Well, it's not that big a deal. But at the same time, I'm sure deep down, part of him must be wondering, I have to get this year right. Because if I don't get this year right, the questions stack up. He needs a steadiness on his CV. It's like someone with a CV with all these short stints in it. Like, what does this mean?
Mm.
So in a way, he probably needs a full year here where he does really well, and then see, does it open any doors?
Yeah. So, people are funny. A few people claiming to be Pádraig happened to text in at the same time. So I think we know they're not actually Pádraig.
How do you prove it?
Well, so someone says, tell Emer to hurry up, Pádraig. in brackets, I'm in the VIP departure lounge sipping a G&T. Probably not Porrig.
Unlikely he's to be texting.
Porrig. this is Porrig. Before I go home, which of my phones did Emer find? that's not funny.
Well, I mean, not if you're Emer. And that actually is Porrig. That's not funny at all.
Great news. Emer has been back in touch. The Emer.
Oh, okay.
Success. Thanks, lads. He heard the message. He came back for his phone. He's working the night shift. Engineer in a hangar. Baby is asleep, so I couldn't chase him down.
Oh.
That's fantastic news. Porrig Emer, happy to be asleep.
Less exciting story that he was just going to work and coming home afterwards, yeah, rather than going to another country.
Wasn't quite the emergency I thought it was, Emer, to be fair.
He'll be back in the morning.
It's I got grand, the distinct like, impression he was leaving the country without his phone, so I feel like you've given us the runaround there.
We had a reasonably good slot to talk about there, and you were completely gone because you were worried about this person, yeah, going to the airport.
So Porrig was going to be without his phone for 12 hours?
Yeah.
Emer, in fairness, I don't know if that was...
Yeah.
Not as exotic as
don't get on to us if he forgets it tomorrow.
Yeah. I know. Happy to be of service. So, final thoughts then on Jack Byrne. I'm going to go and watch him play because I...
You should go and watch
him. He was on the show around the time. He was going very well in Holland and he was interesting and did have a bit of arrogance in a good way and backed his ability. And look, he's at Man City for that many years. He's the kind of player that we want to go and watch.
Yeah, listen, he's flawed, you know, but he's got a lot going for him as well. Okay. There is a story on an airport team. I know you want to go to ads.
Yeah,
but I did a piece to him last year. I put this story to him and he confirmed that it was true because I'd heard it from someone else.
Yes.
And basically involved Jack Byrne, been in England a couple of years ago, gone home for Christmas, on the way to the airport, and there's a little bit of a car accident with another car in the way. Right, he has a little bump. I wrote about this, it's all fine, you know.
Yeah.
And the story goes, they were both in a situation, they were all trying to get home for Christmas. And, you know, I think they're from the north and they're pretty upset because, you know, this is our flight for Christmas. We've missed it. You know, we're in real bother here. And Jack whips out the phone, pays for flights for everyone, brings them all home for Christmas, sorts it all out, you know. So,
nice
like, he's got a bit of, I think people should go and watch him because you'll enjoy watching him on the pitch. I'm sure some of his teammates, like, they see him. He's got very expressive on the pitch, you know, and he'll want everything done to a certain standard, but hey, it'll be fun to watch and see how he sells.
Okay, good. That's the big sell. Shamrock Rovers marketing department will be thanking you. That's good.
We'll see.
Now, still 1-0 Newcastle, by the way, and there's only about 30 seconds left in that game. Next up, we're going to be talking to Leon Blanche from our sponsor, Ball Sports, after the break. In the course of this discussion, we will be referring to betting odds and gambling. Remember to gamble sensibly. For more, check out gambleaware.ie or visit dunlewy.net. dunlewy.net. Back in just one second.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now then, welcome back. Leon Blanche from our sponsor Boyle Sports on the line. Long time, low talk. Evening.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. So, Champions League action is back. You're going to help us glance ahead to it. We've got the big one tomorrow in Old Trafford. Manchester United against PSG. Given Neymar's injury, given Cavani is out, Pat Nevin was on earlier, and he's leaning with Manchester United to get through against PSG. How are we seeing tomorrow?
Yeah, look, Joe, I think everyone probably felt when this draw was initially made back in December that it was going to be an easy enough tie over two legs for PSG, but of course Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come in and Manchester United have definitely improved drastically. They're favourites to win at home at 13-10. PSG are available at 2-1 and the draw here is 12-5. I probably remember PSG playing against Liverpool in the first group game of the Champions League and they were pretty poor, but they were exceptional at home. Mm. But I think if Man United want to go through here, they probably will have to do their best to keep a clean sheet because PSG have a formidable record at home, whether it be in the French League or whether it be in the Champions League. But United, they don't really have any injury concerns. And as you rightly said, in terms of what Pat Navin said, two of those players, Cavani and, of course, the Brazilian who normally rolls around more than he does actually get involved in the game, but he's exceptional on his day. Those two players missing is a huge boost. Neymar can win any game, but to not play at Old Trafford tomorrow night, United should be going in there quite confident and at 13-10, better than even money. I'm sure a lot of Man United fans will be hoping they can win the first leg.
As a matter of interest, who is the favourite to be the next permanent Manchester United manager, Leon?
At the minute, Joe, we've just kind of suspended betting because there's been huge developments over the last kind of two or three days, maybe even 4 days, in terms of Solskjaer's comments. He's now starting to talk as if he's planning for the future. Mm. A lot of these young players have signed on for long-term deals, the likes of Martial, Rashford, even Ashley Young has signed on for one more year of an extension to his contract. But you just listen to Solskjaer and he's talking about 2 or 3 years' time down the line. Mm. And I suppose looking at the record he's done so far, he's done exceptionally well. I know Pochettino, he was the favourite before we suspended betting on this type of market, but I just feel maybe Pochettino will stay with Spurs going into the new stadium. So Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he's got the fans behind him.
Yeah,
that's
he
a
sure
big
does.
Thing at Old Trafford.
He sure does. Quick word before you go then. Speaking of Pochettino, Spurs host Borussia Dortmund on the Wednesday. Borussia Dortmund top of the Bundesliga. What's the market saying about this one?
Yeah, look, they are top of the Bundesliga and they've done exceptionally well this year. I think you and I spoke in the group stages and everyone thought it would be a miracle if Tottenham Hotspur made it through, but they did. They got there. And they don't have Harry Kane. They don't have Dele Alli. But in Son, they've got one of the best players in the Premier League at the moment. And Spurs are favourites at 13-10. Right. Pretty similar pricing. Borussia Dortmund are 2-1. And the draw here is 12-5. I just think, Joe, here, Dortmund are flying at the moment. And it's not just about Wednesday night's game. It's about two legs. And I think Dortmund are well capable of scoring. So it's going to be a tough ask without Harry Kane or Dele Alli. But at the minute, Pochettino, they're winning games. They're not winning them easily, but they're winning them by getting stuck in. So it's going to be an interesting match. But Dortmund, for me, over the two legs, I think they might just have enough to see off Tottenham Hotspur.
Okay, we'll see how it all transpires. Leon, thanks so much.
All the best, Joe.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.